At first glance, you could say that military propaganda and entertainment is a niche topic. But as the work of you and your colleagues shows, the issue has a much bigger impact than you might first think. How did you get into research in this topic area in the first place?
My co-author, Tom Secker, and I were discussing the extent to which the US military and CIA were involved in Hollywood cinema and network television. And we decided to put in some Freedom of Information Act requests because we realized that there would be a list somewhere, a database that said from the American government which films they had worked on. The American government actually had accidentally, or we think accidentally, revealed that there was a database in an email that I had written to them about 10 years ago. They were trying to get rid of us, I think. And they said, you can't do anything without the database. So we said, okay, we'll have the database. And this led to us realizing that there were several thousand films that had been affected by the Department of Defense. And then it snowballed from there because we realized that the role of the FBI was much greater than anyone had previously thought, that the role of the CIA was much greater than anyone had previously thought, and so on and so forth. The list now of film, and if you include individual TV shows, is about 10,000 or so products that have been affected at script level by the Department of Defense, FBI, CIA, or the major police forces, NYPD and LAPD.
Damn, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. I mean, that is over 100 years, but the vast majority of them have been over the past 25 years. So the process has accelerated. And the depth of involvement in most cases is pretty significant. You know, they are affecting scripts for political reasons, usually.
If you could take us through this process, like how does the Department of Defense or the CIA get influence on those movies in the first place?
Producers want to save some money, and they can usually save a few hundred thousand dollars, maybe even a few million dollars, if they're making a military film by getting equipment from the Department of Defense in particular. So if they want an aircraft carrier, or if they want Black Hawk helicopters, or if they want to show the latest F-16 fighter jets or whatever it is, they will approach the military and ask them for that help. And then the military says, okay, show us all of your script and we will let you know if we can help you. So the military then has a lot of bargaining power to control that script. The producers are then tied into a contract where they will have these things, this support, if they agree to any changes that are made by the military.
So the Pentagon certainly gets a lot of requests for support. And what are the criteria used to determine whether or not they will actually support a film?
They'll support a film if it shows the US military itself in a good light. They do say officially they want to represent the military accurately. But of course, like any PR agency, all they are really interested in is presenting their own organization in a positive way. So they want to show that the military itself is a decent institution, and that the Pentagon is a decent institution. But also, interestingly, in their contracts, they also talk about protecting the reputation of the United States government itself. And that is a step further on from what we can see in, say, most British PR documents that are, you know, where the British government or the British military is involved in entertainment. But the US examples are pretty explicit. They want all the good things for the military itself and for the American government, and none of the bad things.
how transparent is the Pentagon to the public about the involvement in Hollywood? Are there disclaimers before movies, or is there any kind of transparency, really?
Well, your listeners will no doubt have seen numerous military-supported films. And at the moment, the Department of Defense is credited on most of these productions, TV shows and films. But they are credited at the end of the credit sequence. And the credit sequences are often, you know, 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long. So very few people actually see that. The Department of Defense never says up front that they are working on the production. They just put it in the small print at the very end of the credits, which is not really adequate, I don't think.
There is like this ominous term, showstoppers. Could you explain to our listeners what are showstoppers and how does it affect the movies at the end?
Showstoppers are what the Department of Defense documents call the major problems. So if they receive a film script or a TV script that contains anything about, say, mental health problems in the military, or high rates of suicide or sexual assault or other forms of assault in the military, that would be a showstopper. It means that they will not in any way negotiate with a production that is presenting those kind of ideas, those kind of narratives. There are also other things, such as if there is any indication that the United States isn't in control of its nuclear weapons. Anything to do with anything controversial like chemical and biological weapons programs that are usually showstoppers. Anything that indicates that the US military is or even has been racist is a showstopper. So there's a long list of these things, and they are the things that the Department of Defense simply will not cooperate on productions that are like that.
That's pretty significant.
Really significant, because it changes the entire cultural landscape of the United States. In fact, if you think about it, I mean, we as Europeans probably see the United States as quite a militarized culture, a sort of macho masculine culture. But actually, that's not necessarily the people of the United States that are that are leading that. It is actually, at least partly, but probably primarily, that they are being led by these huge and unpleasant organizations, arms companies and their state affiliates in the form of the Pentagon and the major national security organizations. It's them who, from a top-down perspective, are determining this kind of macho, militaristic, interventionist political culture. I don't think that American people are necessarily as on board with that as perhaps the stereotype goes.
In my opinion, another major problem that arises from the Pentagon's influence on film productions is the twisting of facts in films that are supposed to depict historical events. A very popular example of this is the movie Black Hawk Down from the year 2001. Can you describe how an actual US Army debacle suddenly looks like a big success on the screen?
Black Hawk Down is such a classic case that it is worth discussing, although I should note that there are so many other examples that I wouldn't want any listener to think that this is in any way isolated. This kind of story is very common. On the case of Black Hawk Down, though, it was a foreign policy action from the early 1990s where the United States went into Somalia and actually killed several hundred or even several thousand. The CIA estimated that there were 7,000 to 10,000 people killed in that conflict while the US itself was actually involved. They blundered into numerous political meetings, killing a lot of people in very stupid ways, whilst making a big show of handing out grain in parts of the country that actually weren't as in need of grain as others anyway. So it was a humanitarian mission that really was heavily militarized and was not entirely necessary, really, in the places that they went. And then, as part of that, they tried to arrest a warlord, and 19 American servicemen were killed during that raid. It was a humiliation for the United States, but then the filmmakers used a book by a very good journalist called Mark Bowden, and Bowden's book itself was actually very good, and revealed a lot of these bad things about what the United States had done. But then Bowden, I mean, he was willing to take the money and run, I think. He worked with the U.S. Department of Defense and with Ridley Scott, the filmmaker, to create a narrative which was about how these people, these terrorists in Somalia, were a bit like the Al-Qaeda, and that America showed resolve and spiritual strength against these people. And so it created an atmospheric film which was emotionally providing the idea that the United States was working with international allies to be as soft touch as possible, and to be an organization of peace that is being victimized by these sort of global terrorists. There was nothing like that. It was a botched bunch of fights with some warlords that the United States waded into really stupidly in the early 90s. That's the reality.
If we turn our sights away from only movies to other form of entertainment products, for example, in about a week, there is the Super Bowl, the largest event of American sports. And before the beginning of every game, aircrafts from the military flying above the stadium and everybody cheers and salutes the military. Is this another form of propaganda?
Yes. My colleague Tricia Jenkins from Texas has written about this, but she refers to how at all of these sporting events where there are flyovers by the US military, it's a bit of a trick because the players from these games come out and then the audience stands and applauds the players. But at the same time as the players come out, the military sends their jets over. So it looks to everyone who's watching that the audience are standing up and applauding the military. But actually, they're applauding the players. So there's something of a trick there. I mean, they might want to applaud the military as well, but they are kind of obliged to applaud the players, and the military takes advantage of that.
For example, the NFL. Does the NFL have a contract with the military to, like, do those flyovers?
The answer to that question will be probably in the documentation that we have. But currently we have probably tens of thousands of pages of documentation. And we just haven't had time to go through the specific parts on sport.
Is that a strategy of, for example, the Department of Defense to bury you in paperwork to cover the tracks of their work?
Certainly the Pentagon has, over the years, taken various strategies to hide its involvement in entertainment, and they have been really interesting for many years, from the 1970s all the way into the early 2000s, and in fact beyond. There was only one historian who had all of the documentation. He was called Lawrence Seward. It wasn't until he died in 2018 that we were actually able to acquire the library material, which was archived. There's electronic material that's come out over the past 10 years or so as well, but the physical archive of material was not open. In fact, I went to Washington, D.C. in 2018, about 6 months before Seward's death, and the library there presented me with various boxes of documents. But all of the key material, all of the most scandalous material, all of the best-known films had all been removed. So the library was actually complicit, and I won't say deliberately, but the library was, for one reason or another, complicit with their donor, Lawrence Seward, in keeping that material away from other researchers. So basically, Lawrence Seward, for about half a century, blocked the ability of researchers to acquire scripts and annotated scripts and memos and anything really about the relationship between the military and Hollywood. And so what the Pentagon was able to do was to say, well, look, we don't have to provide you with this material by law because they are in the private collection of Lawrence Seward. And Lawrence Seward, he just never shared any of his documentation. And we asked several times, both me and Tom Secker, but on all occasions, he said no. I don't think anyone saw Lawrence Seward's collection, except for possibly his co-author, for many, many, many decades. Damn. And bear in mind that Lawrence Seward was working very, very closely with the Department of Defense. And you can see the details about that on our documentary Theaters of War, where basically they were contracted in with each other. And essentially, Seward was working for the military. So he was the only person who was writing the history of the relationship between the military and Hollywood. And so essentially, the entire history of the relationship between Hollywood and the military was written by the military.
I'm very, very interested in how propaganda works. So propaganda in entertainment products is also known as soft propaganda. What are the dangers of this special kind of manipulation?
One reason is that when we watch entertainment, our intellectual defenses are down. If you're watching the news, you might engage your critical faculties rather more than you would if you're watching Top Gun 2. But actually, something like Top Gun 2 is as biased as, say, Fox News, because it is promoting the idea of a military airstrike on Iranian nuclear facilities, which don't actually exist, at least not for weapons. So I think our defenses, our intellectual defenses are down when we're watching entertainment. So that's a really important aspect of that.
If we look into the future, what can there be done to reduce the influence of this propaganda on the public opinion of the military?
I think public awareness and critical engagement, you know, if journalists and members of the public write about, talk about, make this an issue and say that they do not like it when the Department of Defense is involved, and to say that you shouldn't really watch a film, if you certainly shouldn't buy a film, if the military or CIA is involved in its production. But I have to say that I think that although these things are important, tackling the visual industry, really what needs to happen is a wholesale root and branch change in attitudes to American military intervention. And that is not something that can just be dealt with in TV studios and film studios or in our living rooms. That is something that needs to be dealt with on the streets.